Got chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees. Chicken in the pots, the Mottawog, the Petaloomies. Out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken Petaluma, never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful's Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming in Sonoma County and beyond. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. Hope you've had a good weekend, a good holiday, some relaxing time perhaps even. Wouldn't that be nice? Couple things I want to talk about before I introduce this evening's guest. And first of all, I just want to say thanks so much to the Sebastopol Farmers Market. Their annual Customer Appreciation Day took place today. It's always such a nice thing. There's gifts on the table from different vendors. There's gift certificates. Customers are invited to just take something. And then there's also yummy things to eat. Dominique Cotara of Dominique Sweets made a lot of pies. And a number of people made cookies. Somebody made what looked like a really delicious minestrone soup. And then they asked me to be there, and I served polenta. I served a lot of creamy polenta with three different toppings. I had pomegranate walnut gremolata. I had some toasted and minced sweet chilies. And then I had wild mushrooms with cream and fresh goat cheese. And every bit of it, I think I must have served at least 150 people. Every bit of it was gone. So it was a very nice day, even just a tad warm. I didn't need a jacket at all. So lovely Sebastopol Farmers Market today. And let's see, next weekend, the beginning of December, the market will change a little bit, as it does every December, in that it takes place in the parking lot and in the town square. And when the market went year-round about 3 or 4 years ago, the deal was that during the month of December, they could not use the parking lot. The town wanted that parking for Christmas shoppers. So the whole market is smushed into the town square. It's a great market. They fit everybody in. So that will start next Sunday and continue through the end of the year. It's also the season for craft fairs and holiday fairs, not just crafts, but art, jewelry, beautiful clothing, books, all sorts of things. And it's a great way, if you do shop for December holidays, it's a great way to keep your money local and not have to deal with the masses of crowds at malls and such. I will not enter a mall now for many weeks. Two long-running craft fairs are taking place next weekend. The annual Holiday on Florence, which is just fun to drive down Florence and see all the great sculpture. That will be taking place at Abbey Bard's, as it always does. It takes place at the Weaving Studio at 343 Florence Avenue, Big Yellow House. And there will be seven different people. Chris Boyd with pottery, Shelley Ray with jewelry, Lucy Martin with nature paintings, Linda Weber with prints and collage, Abby Bard with her gorgeous weavings. Full Bloom Flower Farm will take place this year. She will have wreaths and botanicals. Hedda has been a guest here on Mouthful before, really does wonderful work and grows her own flowers. And I will also be there too with, I think, seven different titles of my books. And there's always a nice buffet in the kitchen. And this time I'm going to be taking polenta, creamy polenta, and we'll have a little polenta bar set up there. And that takes place on both Saturday and Sunday from 11 until 5. And then from 10 to 5, just a few blocks away, is Bijou. It is the 8th annual open house and holiday sale. I'm not going to read all the artists. There's 8, 9 artists, everything from handmade aprons and napkins, ceramics, clay sculptures, photos from Jeff Conley, whose work you may know from the Press Democrat, something called Heady Brushes. I have no idea what that is, but I've been to this fair many times. It's a wonderful, wonderful fair. Both of them are. So put that on your list for having some fun next weekend. If you are still finding it a little difficult to come to terms with the election, the Sebastopol Farmers Market has something new for you. Several women set up a booth with a little sign that is reminiscent of peanuts. It's called The Doctor Is In, and they are offering Trump therapy. And it's not just assistance in helping you get through it. They have some very practical things that you can do that we can all do to try to keep our country on a positive track. And they will definitely be there next week. I was really happy to see them, talk to them for a while. Really dynamic women of many age. They span several decades, and they had some really great ideas. It was a great conversation. So that takes place next Sunday as well, and possibly for several Sundays after that. Okay, now I'm going to introduce our guest, and she writes about a place that is very dear to my heart. The first place I lived when I moved to Petaluma, when I moved to Sonoma County a long time ago, lived out on a dairy farm in Lakeville that I've talked about many times. This is Frances Rivetti, who came much further than I did to get to Sonoma County. I came from just one county over. She came all the way from England, where she worked as a journalist, and we'll probably talk about that. And she now has two books out that look at Southern Sonoma County. Frances Rivetti, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
So you have a great story about, I'm going to get you just a little closer to the mic.
Okay.
You have a great story about how you got here. And it's reading between the lines, you met an American man.
Actually, no. He's British-Italian.
Oh, and how did...
He had a job opportunity in San Francisco that was short-term.
Okay.
6 months it was supposed to be. And so we had got together. I was still in my early 20s and thought adventure was a good idea, and 6 months in California sounded fantastic. But I was complete English rose, grew up in rural England, happy as could be there. I had no intentions to leave permanently. Mm-hmm. And here we are 26 years on.
Well, yes. And, you know, I know a lot of people who have gone the opposite route.
Yes, yeah.
And so you obviously made California your home.
Yes. Once we arrived here, we were in Alameda for the first 2 years and then moved up to Sonoma County. And I just absolutely fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
What part of Petaluma do you live in?
We live in West Petaluma, on the edge of town.
Mm-hmm.
So nice. We have that perfect blend of country and town and access out to the coast.
I love that part of Petaluma.
Yeah,
it's really great.
Fantastic.
You also have the coastal fog from the Petaluma Gap, which is a great thing. The natural air conditioner.
Hence the titles.
Yes, a Fog Valley Winter and Fog Valley Crush. Love at First Bite. That was your first book.
Yes.
And you'd been writing for Petaluma 360.
Well, actually, the Argus Courier, for 5 years, I had a column in the Argus Courier, food, food and culture, lifestyle column. And so focusing on our little micro community, farming community, so intensely for 5 years in the column, I had really amassed some wonderful notebooks. And as you spend your time working in this area too, it's I realized how vital and important a time we are in history with the multi-generational farms and their younger people figuring out how to keep them viable. And this so this movement into organic and yogurt making and cheese making and all sorts of exciting things that are going on out at the in the farms. I really wanted to chronicle that into a book that would have a further reach to be able to tell share these stories with the outside world.
What are some of the things you found that made you feel optimistic about the future of farming and agriculture in that part of Sonoma County?
Just the sheer enthusiasm for trying new things and being innovative and tradition having got carried forth through 5-6 generations, not being afraid now to make those changes. And I think a lot of the older generations that are still working in the farms with their children and grandchildren being open to coming to trying completely new things. And I think it was mostly, you know, if families wanted to stay in farming, understanding that they had to be more open to new ways. And I just think that was extremely encouraging to witness that and the coming together of the generations and the coming back of younger people who probably you know, had gone out into the world to try other things and then realized what an incredible treasure and bounty we have here in Sonoma County and West Marin, and why not come back and utilize their newfound skills and incorporate that into keeping these farms viable.
Yeah, it's really, you know, we need all the good news we can get on that
front. Yes.
And it's nice to see a lot of them are staying in farming and not going by the wayside. I mean, we just lost an incredible farm in California, not in Sonoma County, but up in, oh gosh, I'm not sure of the county. I don't think it's Yolo, but it might be. It's Knight's Landing, west of Sacramento, and there was a gourd farm there, a truly stunning gourd farm. They had gourds, you know, as small as a quarter and as long as you could stretch your arms and everything in between. And people who study hula, there are 54 hula schools just in the Bay Area. We all made our, you know, field trip up there to buy the gourds to make our drums, make our ipus and ipuhekes, and the children didn't want to continue it. And we're all just finding out in the last few months that it just it closed this last year because none of the kids wanted to. And they, I mean, they had literally millions of gourds.
Well, it's incredibly hard work to keep farms going.
Yes.
You know, and I have got to know, gotten to know several farmers very well
tell
over
about
the years of writing.
You choose one that you'd like to tell us about.
Well, I got to know Deborah Walton of Canvas Ranch. She's since taken off for some travels for a little while.
Do we know what's going to happen to the farm yet?
I think it's still...
Because it fell out of escrow.
Yes, so it's still in... I think it's still...
It's still theirs. And
yes.
Just there in Italy right now, I believe.
Yeah, so I think I'll hear more when she
gets
back in town.
Right.
Yes. But talk to Deborah extensively about the farming realities of organic farming. Mm-hmm. And she really impressed upon me the fact that the need for whoever is coming in to revive these farms or start new ones, to really diversify and have many things going.
She was very good at that.
Yes, yeah. And I think workshops, classes, events, farmers markets, you know, as many things as farmers can.
Yeah, a lot of value-added products as well she did.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So it isn't anymore just as simple as having one product.
Right. And, you know, a lot of farmers do focus on that.
Yes.
They want that. And I think we need that.
Yeah.
But with land like it is, it's a little difficult. Did you? What about? Do we have much of an olive community in Petaluma? No, we certainly have the huge McAvoy Ranch.
Yes, yeah, and the community milling. I did chronicle the community in the first book, and that was a big draw for Petalumans that were growing their own olives. And there has been, I think, a need for a lot more information about planting olive trees. A lot of people were very enthusiastic about doing that.
Yeah.
And then not taking care of them and the olive fruit fly.
The fruit fly was new to California. Yes. When the whole Renaissance started, we didn't have it.
Yes.
And now it's problematic.
So there's a need for educating all of us who like to think, oh, yes, I can have a mini olive orchard in my backyard.
Right.
There's a lot of work to be done in taking care of them. So.
Yes, and you can't let any olives stay on the ground because that will hatch the fruit fly, the olive fly.
And McAvoy Ranch is going through a lot of changes.
Yes, they are.
Are they
going to continue with olives?
Well, I've heard different rumors about that. I'm sure you have too.
I've heard they're going to discontinue olives entirely. Then I've heard, no, that's not true.
I would be surprised. I mean,
they put in a lot of trees.
Yes, yeah. But I have heard that rumor too, so we'll have to endeavor to find out what's happening there.
Yes.
But I did go out over for their recent wine release day, November day, which was beautiful. And they're doing really well with the wine. It's great wine, a beautiful tasting room out there.
Uh-huh.
So I hope that they can keep the olive oil and wine going together.
Yeah, so it would be nice. Yeah. Did you investigate spend time with any of the older dairy farmers?
Well, I did spend time out at the Fork and the Yacomini's Point Reyes Blue Cheese. Mm-hmm. That's an old dairy farming family. So, yes.
They have done miraculous
things. Oh, my gosh, a preeminent. Yes. Yeah. And then I did also pretty extensive work in the cheesemaking arena and visited a lot of the farmers that had converted part of their farms into producing cheese, and that's very exciting.
Yes, I know you've spent time at Marin French.
Yes.
One of our oldest cheese factories. When I first moved here, and you know, like I barely got over the county line. I lived in Lakeville, back not far, maybe a mile from the Sleepy Hollow Dairy, which was on Highway 37, and it's still just there, but not operative. And then I was on the Henning Farm, and when I moved into the Henning Farm, they had just sold their herd. They kept one cow, Muley, and it was wonderful. They would bring me down buckets sometimes of Muley's milk. It was still warm from Muley. But that was, you know, I feel like I saw those individual dairy farms as they were fading.
Yes,
and now the Flucchini's, I don't know if you came across the Flucchini's. They're one of the families making wine now. And they, when I lived across the street from them, their business was solely making and repairing dairy equipment.
Yes, yeah.
And now they, I know they're producing a fabulous Pinot Noir. Really like it. And I think Syrah and Chardonnay and one other varietal. But all on that road where I lived, Old Lakeville Road number 3, there wasn't a single grape.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Now there's Griffin's Lair.
Yes, yeah.
Griffin's Lair is on the property that used to be owned by Warren Beatty's cousin.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Maria. Yeah. I knew her for a while, and then she got married and moved away, and eventually that land sold, but now it's Griffin's Lair, and it's a very nice, some very nice grapes.
I know the family.
Yeah they're really great.
Yes.
So we're going to take a little musical break here on Mouthful, and we'll be right back with more talk about a favorite place, Petaluma. That is X doing a cover of Shoot Out the Lights by, Richard Thompson. I wanted to feature all Richard Thompson music tonight. And the CD I wanted, A Thousand Years of Songwriting, is not here in the studio, so I pulled out a compilation of covers of his songs rather than him doing covers, and we'll also hear from Richard Thompson as well. So right now I am looking at Fog Valley Winter, Pioneer Heritage, Backroad Rambles, and Vintage Recipes by Francis Rivetti. This is the second book, the follow-up.
Yes.
And one of the things you taught you in this first section, the place, it looks like you talk about wave after wave of the settlers who came here.
Yes.
Want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, yeah. Well, I wanted to focus the book on the 10 cultural groups that we recognize most mm-hmm. in Southern Sonoma County and West Marin for shaping the culture, food culture mm-hmm. that we have there. But of course, history didn't start there, so I have a chapter on the Coast Miwok, which
sure.
is very important. And I pushed my boundaries north for this book to get up to Fort Ross to write about the Russians and their food culture, important food culture, Spanish, Mexican era, mm-hmm. and then really launching into the meat of the book with the gold rush and the arrival of the different mainly European groups that mm-hmm. came into the area.
Mm-hmm. The Portuguese were a strong influence.
Yes.
And still are.
Yes.
In a lot of ways.
Yes. They arrived mainly from the whale fishing industry and jumped ship, I think, in San Francisco. And uh-huh. I think Tiburon Sausalito was the first mm-hmm. landing spot, and they recognized it looking very much like the Azores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what yes. In my experience, a lot of Portuguese people who live in Sonoma County go back to the Azores.
Yes, and gradually over the 20 or 30 years after the initial gold rush, the Portuguese and the Italians saturated San Francisco and migrated north and mm-hmm. ended up in coastal West Marin and Sonoma, mm-hmm. and that's why we have these huge populations of farming families that recognize the land and the environment and the weather and mm-hmm. just settled and farmed and never went back.
Yes. yeah. And we've got cheesemakers. Certainly we have Joe Mattis, which, you know, for a long time, Joe Mattis was the one of the best hidden secrets of Sonoma County because their cheese was not distributed. And you drove. Have you been there?
No.
Because it's off of Todd Road in mm-hmm. western Santa Rosa. And you still have to go down this bumpy driveway that's not as bumpy as it once was. But you used to go and you had to push the family sheep away from the door so you could get in. And the bell would ring and eventually someone would come out and sell you cheese. And it was, $2.50 a pound when I started shopping there.
Oh, wow.
And then probably about a decade or more than a decade later, Tamales Bay Foods and Kelgall Creamery began distributing it. And it took off from there, and you can now find it. I mean, you can find it in local grocery stores, but other grocery stores for $24.99 a pound. You still get it. I think it's up to $7 a pound at the farmstead.
Yeah, isn't that fantastic, though, that they're...
Yeah, they haven't really changed much.
Yes,
you know, the cheese has not changed at all. And you would expect over a 30-year period, you would expect the prices to go up. It's great to see them so successful, but still staying basically what they've always been.
Yes, and their competition's so much greater now, too.
With absolutely.
30 artisan cheesemakers in this area now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we have great milk. We have the best milk
in
America.
We really do. Yeah.
And butter, we have fascinating butter now, mm-hmm. including Haverton Hill, mm-hmm. which out in Valley Ford, I don't know if you went that far for dairy, but Haverton Hill is the first sheep's butter, I think, in the country.
Oh, I haven't tried that. Yes, I'll have to try that.
It's hugely expensive and absolutely absolutely delicious. They also sell sheep's milk and sheep's milk ice cream. I think last time I checked with them, they were selling four kinds of sheep's milk ice cream.
Delicious.
And that's gotten really popular.
Yes.
The butter is harder to find.
Yeah.
I think most of it is probably sold in the greater Bay Area.
Yeah.
I think Oliver's carried it for a while, but
McClellan Dairy too.
Oh, McClellan Dairy.
Their butter is very limited. I think very
yes, and it's
fast.
Very good. That's cow's milk butter, and it's fabulous
it
butter.
Is.
But there's something very pristine and bright in the sheep's milk butter. It is so incredibly good.
Might have to add that to my holiday.
It's shopping. It's very addictive.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go a little bit deeper into the newer book. One of the things I really like is the people and their winter celebrations. I love celebrations. I love winter celebrations. I love celebrations. So can you tell us about some of these, especially the holly and the ivy, with English, Irish, and Welsh? How does your British eye look onto how things are done here?
It was just fascinating to me the first few years being here during the winter season, how different it was from how I'd grown up in the UK, mm-hmm. But also similar in some ways. And I think being able to dig deep into the culture of our region, mm-hmm. finding the traditions that are similar in the various cultures, mm-hmm. was very rewarding to me. And over the years, becoming a staunch Sonoma County woman, I've embraced other different cultural mm-hmm. holiday traditions too.
Can you name some? Because, you know, because I'm right here in the midst of it, and I probably don't. I definitely don't see it the way you see it.
Well, certainly a lot of. I'm married to an Italian Englishman, so we have a lot of Italian food. In our
ravioli,
yeah,
tortellini.
In our family celebrations, and so I think for me that the cioppino. I have a cioppino recipe mm-hmm. in this book. The cioppino, the coastal crab, and the recipes for you know, all the wonderful fish recipes this time of year. I also have a recipe for wild boar ragu that mm-hmm. he created with some wild boar that a friend's son. Brought to us mm-hmm. as a gift. And so I think for me, the coming about of this book with a winter theme was from experimenting with foods of different cultures uh-huh. more at this time of year. Uh-huh. Maybe we're cooking more at this time of year and in the kitchen and thinking about the heritage of food. And
mm-hmm. Well, certainly more traditions.
Yes.
And I think
that people, friends and neighbors sharing their mm-hmm. different food cultures uh-huh. also at this time of year happens more often uh-huh. with from tamales to cookie parties. Something
yes.
that was new to me uh-huh. and I do write about that in the book uh-huh. I'd never been to a cookie party in the
yes.
UK and I mean we're mince pies and fruitcake that uh-huh. everybody thinks hilarious but
yeah, one thing I'm curious about in England here, we're starting to see, and I'm not sure what they're called. People have told me different things. The crackers, the things you pop open.
Yes.
You cross over your hand, pop them open.
Yes.
And there's always a little prize, and there's a crown.
Yes.
And
I actually wrote about them in the English section here.
Okay,
great. And in doing my research into the history of them, they actually came about in the Victorian era, but they were based on a French... beautiful French wrapped package uh-huh. that had a firecracker in it, but it was a different shape and probably very different mm-hmm. decor, but similar. That's basically where the idea came from. And a very enterprising mm-hmm. gentleman in England recreated it in an English way. And yes, they're very huge in the UK and yeah. actually quite popular here too.
Yeah, well, I had never seen them. And then, 15 years ago or so, started spending holidays with some friends. One of whom is Irish in heritage, and she always had them. That's where I first saw it. So we all crossed arms, popped them open, traded our prizes.
Yeah, and you have to wear the paper crown.
And wore the crowns. And I always wondered, how, you know, is this something that British people would laugh at us for doing, or do they really do it?
No, they would be surprised. Mostly, unless if they haven't traveled here, they would be surprised that you don't do it here.
Well, I finally had my thoughts solidified when they did it on Downton Abbey.
Yes.
Yeah. I saw it and thought, okay, so it's real.
Yes.
It's not something America yeah. made up.
And nowadays with television and
right.
media, we're really sharing a lot of cultures. Mm-hmm. I mean, Halloween was not a big thing in the UK when I was a child, but apparently it is really quite big now with all the American TV popularizing it.
That I read something recently about Iceland. And Iceland is the least religious country on the planet. And they don't necessarily get married. you know, they live together, they have kids, maybe they break up and have kids with someone else, and it's all very happy, and there's not all this, like, there's not this huge wedding industry. But it said, with the popularity of American television, two things have gotten popular that have now made weddings popular, and that's bridal showers and engagement rings. And I said, oh, poor Iceland, go back to your ways. That's why I want to go live there.
Yeah, well, the prom, too, apparently. That was, that we didn't have proms. We didn't have any.
Nor should you.
But they do. They're
starting to do that now
in the UK.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let's take one more break and hear from the real Richard Thompson this time. Richard and Linda Thompson from the fabulous album Shoot Out the Lights. That was the great song, Wall of Death, here on Mouthful. Thanks for sticking with us. We are talking with Frances Rivetti from Petaluma. Her two books, Fog Valley Crush, Love at First Bite, and then Fog Valley Winter, Pioneer Heritage, Back Road Rambles, and Vintage Recipes. I really love the cover design. Did you do this art?
No, this is Nikki Ovitt. She's a Petaluma-based illustrator, commercial illustrator. I found Nikki's work. She works for a lot of, well, she has many wonderful clients, but she has done work for several great restaurants that I like in the region. There are menus and things.
Okay, well,
and so I found her work and approached her and said, would you be interested in working with me on my book? And we absolutely hit it off splendidly and have had such an amazing time working together. She's
great.
So talented. And she, in the second book, Nikki actually illustrated the recipe section. They're all the little illustrations you see in there are all hand drawn. By Nikki.
Yeah, well, I really, really like the look of it. Now, you chose to self-publish.
Yes.
Who did you work by any chance with Lorna Johnson?
I did.
You did?
Yes.
I've known Lorna Johnson forever.
Yes, Lorna.
And well, she's making some beautiful books.
She really is. And I had known Lorna socially for quite a while, and she knew I was working on a book, and we met, and I looked at some of the books she'd done before, and she said, well, why don't you bring in a book that you really like the feel of and look of, so I can get an idea about what kind of book you'd want. And that was another little piece of magic that fell into the puzzle. Uh-huh. And a local editor too, a concept editor, Elaine Silver. Mm-hmm. So it was an all-woman team. We sat around my kitchen table most of the time too, when we got into the production period for this book. Pots of tea and my homemade scones. Yeah. And it was a really wonderful experience to do
that. That's great. How long, say, from deciding that you wanted to put it together to having a book?
2 years.
2 years?
Yeah, two years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And the first production was the first time I'd done that, so it was scary.
Sure.
And big and a lot of things to figure out. But as it was a regional subject matter, I felt it was appropriate to publish myself and manage all aspects of it and have it really be how I wanted it to be. I didn't want anybody to manipulate
And then you also had the distribution angle.
Yes, yes.
Was that challenging?
I actually did a Kickstarter for the first book, and I have a blog, Southern Sonoma Country Life, and I had my column in the Argus Courier, so I had a lot of readers and followers that was really supportive, and the Kickstarter was successful and enabled me to produce the first book.
Oh, nice.
And then I was very careful with any money the first book made and put it back into the pot for producing the second book.
But did you get a distributor to?
No, I've been distributing.
You've been distributing yourself.
Yes, yeah.
That has always, because some people say, oh, why don't tell me I should self-publish, and I've not done that yet.
I think if I did if I did something on a bigger volume, the second book I printed 2,000 copies and with a local subject, I think that within a couple of years I've sold about 1,600 copies of the first book, so I'm, you know,
and the other one has just come out very recently.
Yeah, but if I was producing 10,000 copies, I'd definitely have to look at a distributor.
Definitely have to
and,
get it.
You know, hopefully as I keep going and get more experienced and more readers discover my work, then we'll, you know, I'll reconsider how I move forward. But for now, this was a cottage industry, and it worked beautifully.
Well, good. You know, it's so great that you hired an editor.
Oh, I wanted it to be.
A lot of people
self-publishing
and they don't do that.
No, I wanted it to be professional.
Yes.
Yes.
You pulled it off beautifully.
Thank you.
You also pulled something else off beautifully. It's a little more ephemeral. It will be gone before the books are. Why don't you tell us about this beautiful bread cake?
This afternoon I baked Bara Brith, which is a Welsh miner's bread, fruit bread. And I remember having this in the UK as a child, as a tea time treat. Mm-hmm. And it was something that in the mining days, the miners' wives would bake a loaf of this bread. I'm sure it would last all week, and wrap it up in paper and slip it into the tuck bag for the miners to take down the mine, and it would be nourishing and sweet but not too sweet.
It's
dried fruit soaked in black tea, cold black tea.
Oh, interesting.
To plump it up, to keep the fruit moist.
I'm major tea, committed tea drinker.
Oh, well, this
I have been my whole life.
You, then. Yeah, and no yeast, and no butter actually in there. So it's a very simple bread to make, very tasty. And I brought along some homemade jam and some Strauss butter. And you,
we have to try it.
Have to slather that.
How do I do this?
There we go. Sliced some, so you can take a slice and then use this little.
I'm going to take a piece.
And essential that you have butter and jam in it.
Butter, yes. Butter is everything.
Yes, yeah. The British and the Australians butter their tea breads, but I noticed that doesn't happen very often here.
It happens at my house.
Oh, good.
And definitely happens at my house.
Great with tea or a little whiskey for a winter's evening.
Well, it's absolutely beautiful, and I know it's going to taste beautiful, and I'm going to take a bite. And with the Sprouse butter on top, it's just perfect.
Isn't that lovely?
And that's very nice jam, and it's not too sweet.
No, I that's how I like it. Mm-hmm. Just a little touch of sweet, but not too sweet.
Really lovely. It's got a nice tanginess to it.
So the recipe section, I researched in the museum in Petaluma and found vintage recipes for both books and some modern recipes of my own and some adapted old recipes from each of the cultures that I played around with and made into my own. But with the vintage recipes, I really wanted to find things that we can cook today that would have been cooked in the mid-1800s. And I think we're moving back towards that kind of cooking in our organic, fresh, farm-to-table food. So very simple recipes that pretty much anyone can make. I mean, they're not complicated recipes.
And that's how cooking, you know what I mean? Cooking is something that takes place in the home.
Yes.
Cuisine is developed in the home, not in restaurants. And we're in such a restaurant period now where people think it's sad. People think the best food comes from professional chefs. And I don't agree with that.
Well, I have an Italian mother-in-law who cooks the most amazing Italian food I've ever had.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I've raised three sons, and the youngest one who's here with us today. And I've cooked.
He didn't want to talk, though.
He's smiling, though. And I've cooked for them their whole lives every day, and absolutely love to cook for the family. Yeah.
And I opened the book to one of my favorite things in the world, and that is Crab Louis.
Yes.
This is Mrs. Will
Olchen, I think it is. And she was a...
Okay.
And she was a Petaluma lady who contributed her recipes to one of the cookbooks that I found in the museum.
Cool. It's, you know, this is closer to mine than the ones that you find these days. If you order Crab Louis in almost, not any restaurant, but most restaurants, you get a lot of special salad greens, beets, tomato. Oh, you get all kinds of food, and then some crab, and then a dressing that's very similar to Thousand Island dressing. And I'm old school in that, for me, all I have is a little bit of iceberg lettuce, really to form a bed, and just the outer four leaves.
Yes,
before it gets cabbagey. And then lots of crab. And I do a dressing that's a little bit different. I make the best Louis dressing in the world.
Well,
you don't mind saying.
Well, and you have written a book about dresses, several books about dressing.
Well, yeah, but this Louis dressing I've been making since I was 15 years old.
It's delicious.
Very simple. This is very much, this one has Worcestershire sauce, hard-boiled eggs, ketchup, salt and pepper, mayonnaise, lemon. That is very much like the version my mother made when I was growing up. I do something a little bit different. I begin with hand whipped cream, and it gives it this volume. And then I add cocktail sauce, mayonnaise, lemon juice, minced green onions, salt and pepper, and that's it. But that fresh whipped cream adds this volume to it that makes it more delicate and voluptuous on the palate.
Oh, it sounds incredible.
And it just goes so beautifully with crab.
Ooh.
So we had that for Thanksgiving, first course at Thanksgiving dinner.
And here we are in crab season again. And
I heard
writing.
They closed it yesterday.
Oh, no, I haven't heard the news.
I was with some, because my column in the Press Democrat on Wednesday is all about, yay, we have crab.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm hoping that it's not completely wrong. But somebody said they closed it yesterday. And I haven't had a chance to, because of domoic acid.
Yes, yeah.
And that it was a closure maybe all the way up to Oregon. I don't know. So I have to research that in the morning.
Oh, I hope that's not the case. In writing this book and finishing it off during the closed season, and things were changing regularly, so I had to keep altering the manuscript to reflect whether we were open or not, whether the season was open or not. And
This is the first time I remember the season closing for this reason.
Yeah.
I've seen it close for other, you know, the crab are too small, it's a bad year, but I've never seen it close because of ocean warming. And that's really terrifying. Here is my kind of recipe, and I'm going to read the entire recipe. And I love the name, The Lighthouse Keeper's Winter Warming Chicken Broth. Cut chicken carcass into small pieces and place in a pot with 4 cups of water and 2 teaspoons of salt and a bay leaf. Cover and simmer for 3.5 hours or until the meat drops from the bones. Strain into a bowl, and when the broth is cooled, remove any grease from the top. Makes 1 pint. And that's up until really the 20s and 30s. That's how recipes were written.
Yes.
You know, without all these details.
And I love to follow a recipe like that because it allows the cook to use their own common sense.
And you know, it assumes knowledge.
Yes.
I know this. When I was writing my book, California Home Cooking, I had this talking to a woman who is Swedish. I think Swedish, and she was from Solvang down in Southern California, and she was talking about the lighthearted war between her maternal grandmother and paternal grandfather, and the maternal grandmother had brought some cookies to a party, and the paternal grandfather wanted to know what was in them. So she goes, you know, butter, sugar, whatever, and he's there, well, what about the flour? Isn't there any flour? And she looks at him and she says, well, any damn fool knows there's flour in cookies. Didn't think you even needed to mention it. How do people get your books?
They are available at Copperfields in Petaluma.
Oh, great.
B Street Mercantile, Free Range.
B Street Mercantile. Okay, yes.
Free Range. You know? Do you know?
I don't know Free Range.
You definitely have to check out Free Range, my friend Suzanne's store, next to Acre Coffee on 4th Street.
Okay, yes, of course.
Yeah. The museum will have them. Uh-huh. I'm doing a reading there this week, and they'll have the books. Velvet Ice Boutique, Petaluma mm-hmm. Home and Garden, Petaluma Visitor Center, mm-hmm. and Redwood Cafe in Cotati.
Okay. And then I know that Kathy at Cultivate Home met you at the book fair.
Yes.
And I know she was interested in carrying them at Cultivate
hoping
Home.
She will do, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. And also available online directly.
From you.
Yes.
And
yeah.
How do people find you online?
www.fogvalleypress.info.
Okay, that's fogvalleypress.info. Dot info.
And I held off Amazon with the second book. The first book is on Amazon, but I really wanted to go through the Christmas holiday period.
You make a lot more money if you sell it yourself.
Well, actually, yes, but I really wanted to support the local merchants that have been supportive of me.
Absolutely.
So really driving people to go into the local stores to pick up a copy of the book to support me and our local stores, and then I'll put it up on Amazon after Christmas.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah.
Have you been doing any events with the book, making any appearances, any coming up?
Yes, actually, I've been to many, all the Rotary clubs in Petaluma. It's been pretty great getting to meet all the Rotarians, and Petaluma Garden Club coming up, Petaluma Museum this week on mm-hmm. the 30th, Wednesday the 30th, of November, 6:30 to 8.
Oh, Wednesday's the 30th?
Okay, yes.
I've had today's date wrong.
Oh.
I'm a day ahead. So that means...
I think it is, yes. Well, it's Wednesday evening anyway. Okay.
Larky's birthday is November 29th.
Oh.
She will be 4, so I guess I don't
have
birthday. To do something until Tuesday.
And Bellwether Farms
cheeses. Oh, Bellwether Farms, absolutely.
And wine during the reading at the museum. And that's a fundraiser for the museum.
Okay, so. And that's Wednesday at what time?
Yes, 6:30 to 8 p.m.
6:30 to 8. And the museum is there on...
4th Street. Yes.
4th Street, yes. That's right. I always forget if it's 4th or Kentucky.
4th. It turns into Kentucky. And then December 14th, 2nd Street Flowers in Theatre Square, Mistletoe and Merriment. I'm going to read from the mistletoe section, and they'll have mistletoe and wreaths and beautiful greenery in their flower shop.
Oh, how nice.
In the
how
evening.
Nice.
Yes.
And, you know, Petaluma, it used to be so easy to go from, say, Petaluma to Hillsborough and over to Sebastopol and stop in Cotati and get home before dark. And traffic patterns have just changed what you can do so drastically.
Yes.
So I need to go to Petaluma.
Yes, I have to.
Well, I have to pick up Jim Reichart. I don't know if you know Jim Reichart. Liberty Duck.
Yes.
Yeah. Jim, he helps me feed my dogs. He makes, he grinds duck necks. And that's because I make my dog food. And he grinds the duck necks
Lucky
for me.
Dogs.
So I have to get down. And I only eat 4 ounces a day. And then with little dogs, it's easy.
Oh, I wonder if they realize that they have the best dog food in the United States.
I think they do. I think they know. So yeah, I have to get down there. And when I do go, I try to... spend some time in Petaluma if my schedule's not too crazy. No, we only have like 2 to 3 minutes left, but real quickly, restaurants. We didn't talk about restaurants. Tell me some of your favorite places. I have my favorite places, but I'm probably a tad behind. I know there's new places I haven't been to.
Oh, gosh. My favorite, Water Street Bistro.
My favorite. I think that's one of the best restaurants in Sonoma County.
Yeah, Stephanie's.
Stephanie is fabulous.
She is. In fact, my husband, I offered to make him lunch last week. He was home, and he looked at me, gave me a funny look, and was backing out of the door and said, "I am going to have lunch at Stephanie's." I said, "Well, then you need to invite me too."
Yes.
And we
I make people meet me there.
Yes, she's great.
Yes.
Yeah. So she does an outstanding job. And Central Market and Della is always super fun. There are lots of fun little spots to eat. Indian food. We're big Indian food fans.
Who is doing Indian food in Petaluma?
And now the name is going to pop out of my head.
What street?
It's in the Golden Eagle Center.
Oh, okay.
Dempsey's.
Okay, right by Dempsey's.
Everest.
Oh, okay.
Like to go there.
There
like
I haven't
Indian
been.
Food.
I really like Cucina Paradiso.
Yes, yes. Cucina is always good.
Fabulous
wild goat
soup.
Wild goat is very good.
Haven't been to Wild Goat.
Yep, they do a great job. Mm-hmm. Sugo's great too. Mm-hmm. My friends at Aquas Cafe, I pop in there.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. So it sounds like I'm not really out of date. You named all my favorite places and then just the two that I haven't been to before.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, if you've not been to Water Street Bistro, but maybe you've heard of Daniel Patterson, maybe you remember Babette's, or you know about Qua, and then some of Daniel Patterson's restaurants over in Oakland. He's now playing with all the big dogs, all the top chefs in the world. Stephanie Ratstetter is her last name. She was his right-hand person at Babette's. She really helped shape that cuisine. And Water Street Bistro is just like this little French jewel with very good prices. And on that note, we are out of time. Thank you so much. It looks like Christmas here with all the wonderful things you brought.
Thank you so much for having me.
And again, it will be fogvalleypress.info where you get information about the books. And is there a link to your blog there?
Yes.
And there's a link to our blog and lots of opportunities to meet Frances and buy one of these lovely books during December. I will not be here next Sunday because I will be at a funeral in Oakland. I'll be here 2 weeks from tonight. Take care of yourself. Have a great couple of weeks. Visit your farmers markets. And I'll see you soon.